honest, I think we could have played a lot better. I think we left a couple of points out there on the field. But, you know, we got the win, and that's the most main thing. We got DeAndre Smelter going in the pass game. I think the offensive line did great protecting all day in the pass game. We did a lot of great things on the ground as well. But still, we can get a lot better. And North Carolina coming in trying to rock us after last year. So we'll be watching film and getting better.
Well, that was Vad Lee talking about yesterday's game against Duke. Vad Lee had 4 passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown as well. Had a good game overall. The offensive line also had a good game. And the defense, even though they started out slow and gave up an early touchdown, they had a good game as well. So,
would you say that was a quality win there, Will?
It was a quality win. It's not without its criticism, though, which we'll get into in a few minutes.
Right.
And with that said, my name is Will Patton, and I'm joined by
Andrew Brown.
And this is the 4th and Short podcast. Thank you for listening. We have a lot to talk about today.
Busy day yesterday. Well, definitely a busy
very
day.
Very busy day. Lots of good games. We'll start with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets against Duke Blue Devils. Good win. You know, usually in past years, you look at a game against Duke, and you're like, well, it's Duke. And you could almost chalk it up as a win against an FCS program.
Right.
But, you know, Andrew, I don't think this is your grandma's Duke Blue Devils.
You know,
what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I sat there yesterday kind of pondering that because, you know, if you remember last year, late into the second half, it was kind of in doubt. We had a turnover there that kind of changed momentum. And the year before that, we were up in Durham and we won by a touchdown. So they've been some close games. This one just wasn't close. So I don't know if it's just that we have improved some and Duke has regressed. You know, I'm not really entirely sure, but you know, I don't think Duke is as bad as they once were. I think that David Cutcliffe has done some great things, but you know, if you look at the numbers, we did a pretty good job yesterday, very efficient.
Yeah, we did. And you could make the argument that they had their second-string quarterback in there, but
right.
He is an experienced guy. He's been with the team for a long time. And from what I understand, he was kind of neck and neck with the former starter who got hurt in week 2 for the starting position.
Right. The interesting thing, I mean, he didn't look terrible.
No, you know? And there was times where he looked really good. Actually. It made our defense look silly. We stopped them 3 and out in their first possession, but in their second possession, they just drove down the field. And I think you probably can agree with me, Andrew, I just got images of last year, and I was just kind of, had an oh no moment because our defense wasn't stopping them at all. We weren't getting any pressure on their line whatsoever.
They were just manhandling us up
just
front.
Just marching the ball down the field, just running it up our throats. But after that, you know, after that first touchdown that they got in the first quarter, we really just settled down on defense and really wouldn't let them get anything done. They had a few yards, and they got into a couple of areas where they could score, and we stopped them on 4th down twice, I believe.
Yeah, in fact, that second, it was the third drive. Their second drive, they got the touchdown. The third drive, they started doing the same thing and driving down the field. And I really think that when we stopped them on 4th down, that was a huge, huge momentum shift because it was, I mean, I think it was 4th and 1 and they went for it and ended up losing yardage.
Yeah.
So that really changed the game because at that point, I was just like, great, you know, they're going to go for it and, you know, we can't stop them. We're going to have to get into this shootout, and I don't want to get into a shootout with Duke because that doesn't bode well for the other teams we face either.
Exactly. You know, one of the big things I think I took away from the defense, and yes, you can make all the arguments that you want that it was against Duke, and they had their second-string quarterback out there, and I understand those arguments, and I can agree with them to an extent. But if you look at last year's games and The one of the main differences that I'm seeing with our defense this year is that we adjusted. We adjusted well because they drove that ball down our throats and like we couldn't stop them.
Right.
But then all of a sudden what they were doing really wasn't working at all. And I feel like Ted Roof made some really good adjustments to prevent Duke from running away with it,
right?
Like they did in that second possession.
And if you listen to Coach Johnson, I mean, he said something to the effect of, we, after that first drive, we simplified the defense. And then he made the comment, I know you've heard that from me before, but that's what we did. I mean, that's what he said. We simplified. We just went back to the base package. We said we're not going to try anything fancy. Just going to go at them. And if you look at it, I mean, we didn't really blitz a whole lot. I mean, it was a little, what some would say, vanilla, but it got the job done. You know, you just were going after, say, hey, we're going to stop the run and then let the quarterback beat us, because you can't give up 8 or 9 yards of carry, which in that first drive they were doing. I mean, they were getting 8 or 9 yards right off the ball. They were getting into the second string. And I just was like, gosh, this defensive line is not moving. So whatever they did, they really tightened up. And you know, look, they'd been off for a week. You might have had some rust in there, you know, but they got in there, and as the game got on, they really tightened up. And so, you know, you got to give your props to the defense. They did put in a really good effort.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't complain too much, because I don't know if you know this or not, Andrew, but Georgia Tech's defense is the number one defense in the country right now in terms of points allowed. So we gave up 0 week 1 and 14 in week 3. So that averages out to 7, which is the best defense in the country.
Well,
so
you know, I mean, that's why you
wear that
Ted
badge
Roof,
with honor.
Right? You hired Ted Roof to bring you the best defense in the country. So
and that's what we got.
That's what we got.
That's exactly what we got.
So, you know, I think that you know, you might play a couple games this year where you might give up more than that, but you look good so far.
Yeah. So. And then on the other side of the ball, there were some good and bad things.
Now,
we definitely left some points on the field, but
we did. Now, I don't know. Are you a subscriber of the Patrick Obscure Georgia Tech Statistics magazine?
Oh, no. I'm not familiar with this.
Yes, the Patrick Obscure Statistics from Georgia Tech magazine. It's a little lengthy title. Let me know that yesterday, Vad Lee threw for 4 touchdowns.
Okay.
The last quarterback at Georgia Tech to do that was Reggie Ball during the Chan Gailey era. So that would mean that no Paul Johnson quarterback has ever done that.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, look at the game. We ran a lot of different formations.
We did.
And the Duke players in the postgame, I wasn't able to actually find their whole postgame press conference, but a quote I read from them was that they said Georgia Tech did a lot of things we didn't prepare for.
Yeah.
So we were throwing that diamond. I'd never seen us run that before.
I had never seen us do the diamond, and that's a weapon that I feel like if we get good at that diamond formation along with the other formations that we run, like the pistol and then your standard flexbone, which we've been running for years. That diamond, we were running some really interesting read option plays out of that, kind of similar to what you'd see from Kaepernick with the 49ers.
Right.
Just more of that NFL-style read option that everybody's going nuts over. And at times, it really seemed to work.
You're stacking it up there. You've got a lot of the big B-back and A-backs in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just powering over people with that formation. It looks really interesting. You could get some hard yards that way.
Yeah, and there was a couple times where Vad made the right read and got us some big yards. There were some other times where it didn't work quite as well. One of the things that was interesting, you said we had the 4 passing touchdowns. What I think is interesting is we only had 125 passing yards. That's it.
Right.
So we were making a lot of those passing yards were coming in the red zone, which is something that typically we haven't seen too much of. Usually in previous Paul Johnson offenses, most of our passing yards come from the big play kind of in the open field, not necessarily in the red zone.
Right, you're right.
And so we got some, you know, good quality passes in those situations. DeAndre Smelter caught 2 of them. One of them was just outside the red zone for his first touchdown was a 24-yard touchdown. And they had another one that was like a 10-yard touchdown. And then Godhigh and Lasky had touchdowns as well. And besides that, we really didn't do too much with the passing game. There was a couple of long bombs that we had that were just slightly overthrown, or there was a few drops in there as well. So those are things that we can definitely work on.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, I think that the short passing game in the red zone is something that we've needed for a while. If you go back to last year when we played Miami, Miami on that last play where Tevin goes for it and doesn't get a touchdown, we lose the game. He checked at the line because the defense had prepared. They were expecting us to do that pitch to the A-back on the outside. So he
the
checked
rocket
it.
Sweep.
The rocket kind sweep. Of play. Right. Yeah. So he checked out of that and went into just the QB, you know, follow. The QB where he's going to follow the blocker. And when he checked into that, that's the other play that Miami had expected. So those are the two plays that people say, okay, when they get into short, you know, these red zone situations, they're going to run that rocket sweep and they'll get 7 yards. Well, we needed to add another element so people can't immediately say, okay, when they get here, they're going to do that rocket sweep. Because I think we've, you know, the rocket sweep's a great play, but you know, it's just like anything else. You can't run it till everybody expects you to do it. So
And that's one thing I've noticed this year is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't feel like we've run the rocket sweep nearly as often as we have in previous years.
Right.
And I don't know if that's because we don't have an Orwin Smith-type A-back that can make that play work every time.
Right.
Or if we're just experimenting with other plays, but I don't know. It's something that we haven't seen too much of this year.
Yeah. I think, you got to go with your personnel, and that's what Coach Johnson always says, and maybe your personnel just doesn't dictate that. I think as the season goes on, though, from what we've seen so far, you might see some of those rocket sweeps to Broderick Snoddy, who, my goodness, he is fast.
He is very fast.
And Dennis Andrews had a couple big runs in there early. So,
you
know, we'll see. We'll see. We are loaded at running back.
It's crazy how many people got the ball and how many people have more than a decent amount of rushing yards. Nobody got to 100, but we're really spreading that ball around. It's not like the era when we had Dwyer in there and you could expect him to get 120 yards a game. It's more like we can expect 5 or 6 guys to get 50 or 60 yards a game.
Yeah, and as far as the passing game goes, I think it's good that we saw A-backs and B-backs making catches because, you know, as everybody, we've had emails about it and people have mentioned to us, you know, receiving core we're not sure about. You know, people have said that, and I think that, look, you got to find a way to get the ball out there in the air, and I think we've done that. We are maybe a little inexperienced, I guess is the word, at receiver. Thank goodness for Smelter, I mean, coming out of the woodwork like that, I mean, because he had a great game, and I think we're going to need him down the stretch because, you know, I don't know what happened to the other receivers, but they weren't really involved yesterday as far as catching the ball. I mean, I did see a couple big blocks from them down in open field. So we'll see what happens with receiving, but I think we are very lucky that now we have some A-backs and B-backs who can catch the ball.
Yeah, I agree. The only other thing to talk about and for the Tech game was special teams.
Right.
There were some good and bad things about special teams. We'll start with the good. The 49-yard field goal to start out the game by Butker. It was a great kick. It probably he had extra leg on that. So that's something that we can look forward to. We have a kicker with the type of range that can hit those fairly easily. In the past few years, 49 has maybe been as far as we could hope to ever kick a field goal.
Yeah, I can't remember kicking a 49-yard. If you're at 49, usually, you know, when you're at the 30, the 28 even, Paul Johnson's going to go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. But now we have a kicker we can hopefully guarantee those points. But after that, the kicking game kind of went sour. We had a missed field goal on a 40-yarder that wasn't nearly as tough. He just kind of shanked it a little bit.
It looked bad coming off his leg, too. I mean, it looked immediately, I could tell that that's not coming back. So, I don't know if he just didn't get a good hold of it. And you saw him over on the sideline talking to Coach Johnson, so I don't know if he didn't get a good hold of it. And I think that that could have hurt his confidence a little bit because then he kicked it low. I mean, that last one, he kicked low.
He kicked it low.
Yeah, it looked like a good snap, but, you know, so you got to work on those kinds of things. You got to work on that.
Another thing that we just got to remember is he's a freshman.
And
this is his first conference game. So, albeit there weren't very many people at this game, but still, there's more pressure to perform better.
Right.
In conference games.
Yeah, but on the other side of it, we had a huge punt there at the beginning.
Yeah. That was a surprisingly good punt.
Yeah, it just kept going. So, I mean, you know, we had some good and bad, like you say. I mean, there are definitely areas to work on. Vad had a fumble. Robbie had a fumble went out of the sideline. So, I mean, you had a couple times where you dropped the ball. It didn't come back to hurt you.
Yeah.
But there's definitely right. I mean, there are some things that you're going to need to work on. But it's early in the year. You got to take it. You're going to have some lumps in there.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that I think that does it for Georgia Tech this week. And
right.
Next week they have UNC, which it just gets tougher from here. The next 4 weeks, it's just going to be one tough team after another and probably gets a little bit tougher each week. So it'll be interesting to see. I for one, I felt pretty good after the game. There's a lot of good things that we saw. And, you know, there's areas that we can improve upon, and that's what you want. You don't want that to be the best game.
Right.
You know?
You don't want to peak this early. You got
and
room to grow.
There's still lots of room for improvement, and that's a good thing. And the main takeaway for me is defense is continuing to play pretty good football, I think, for the most part. And Vadley is it looks like he's going to prove to be a really, really special quarterback for us. So,
yeah.
But anyway, let's move on. The next game that we want to talk about, and Andrew, maybe you should lead off with this because you took a few more notes in this game than I did.
Yeah, I have, for many, many years, anybody who knows me, I've always been a huge fan of Jim Grobe. I just think that he's one of the best. And I always say, you know, if I say, okay, if you could have any coach, not the one who's the team that you root for, if you could have any coach and he'd be your coach and you were hiring somebody, who would you hire? And, you know, people list off their, you know, their top five or whatever. Of course, you got the Nick Sabans and, you know, you got Urban Meyer, but I always throw Jim Grobe in there because what he has done at Wake is incredible, absolutely incredible. And he's been this his 13th year, so I believe that he's the longest. Maybe I guess Frank Beamer probably is the longest tenured coach in the ACC. So,
oh yeah, Frank Beamer. Definitely,
yeah, so Jim
is.
Grobe is the second longest tenured. He's taken Wake to 5 bowls in 13 years. They won the ACC, something that hadn't been done since the Dark Ages. And, you know, he's done things that nobody else has ever done, but is that enough at Wake? You know, and I think that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to get antsy and say, well, we got to get rid of Jim Grobe. My question is, who do you think you're going to get? You're not going to find anybody who's been as loyal. Jim Grobe was offered, he's been offered several head coaching jobs, including he was offered the Arkansas job a couple years ago, and they offered, I believe it was, you know, $2.5 million a year, something like that. It was a good amount of money. He flew out in a plane to Arkansas, and by the time he got out there, he just said, I can't do this. I've got to stay awake. So he's been incredibly loyal to your program, and you don't have a history before he got there of any kind of winning. I went back and looked at the records on it. If you take between 1956 and 2000, that's as far back as I could go, so almost 50 years, how many bowls do you think they went to, Will?
I have no idea. Probably not very many.
3 bowls.
Wow.
Okay, Jim Grobe has taken them to 5 bowls in 13 years.
Huh.
Okay. So that tells you something there. Between 56 and 2000, went to 3 bowls. No coach ever got them to more than 1 bowl. So a coach might have had one good season, but that was it. You never had anybody go there and do much more than maybe one good year. So, you know, I don't know. And here's the thing. Wake Forest's athletic department has a lot of problems. I mean, their basketball program is in a shambles. And their football program needs some work. But in my opinion, your football program is the least of your worries. Because you can't expect... You're not going to get the number one recruiting class every year. What Jim Grobe has done there, he runs a veer option offense. You know, he redshirts all of his players. He looks for the diamonds in the rough. He coaches them up. I really think you've got to look at the big picture here. You got to be really careful what you do. Because you get rid of Jim Grobe, I don't know if you're going to find somebody else who can do better than that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's got to be so tough to recruit at Wake Forest and
right.
get those really good players. Because
right.
you're talking about a very, very small school.
Right, and you're in the state of North Carolina where you have some athletes. But you're really the fourth school in North Carolina, and then you have a lot of kids who leave the state because they don't want to play football. So I mean, Vadley is one of them. So I mean, you got North Carolina, Duke, NC State, and then way down there is Wake. So you're the fourth school in the state.
Yeah.
And you're a very tiny school. So, you know, the state of Georgia has a lot of really great athletes. We don't have four Division One, you know, programs.
Exactly.
We can't even support three. So,
yeah.
You know, I just don't know where you go if you're Wake. I mean, you might want to have a talk with Jim Grobe at the end of the season and say, okay, you know, what can we do to improve this? I mean, because, look, I'm sure you could give him more money and, you know, maybe improve facilities and, you know, help his recruiting efforts. But, you know, I don't know that firing him is going to be in your best interest.
And they, and I don't know if we mentioned this yet, but they lost yesterday to ULM, and it wasn't a really pretty loss.
I mean, it was 21-19. So, I mean, you didn't get blown out.
But there was lots of chances. I kind of had that game on in the background for a while, and the score was 21-13 for a very long time, and Wake had lots of chances to score some points and get in there, and they did score a touchdown fairly late in the game, but they missed the two-point conversion, and then by the time they were kicking it off, I think there was a minute or even less
left
in the game.
It was in the last 2 minutes of that game.
Yeah. So, it really stinks because I hate for Jim Grobe to lose games like this. And also, I was really hoping that we could get through the season without the ACC having a loss like this. And this is the first one against a smaller non-BCS school. So,
but
you know,
let's
stinks for Wake. But
yeah, let's be honest. No offense to the Wake Forest alumni and fans, Wake Forest is losing to a non, you know, BCS school is not the same as a Virginia Tech or a FSU or Clemson doing it. It's just not the same. You can look at that, and most people are going to see that and be like, oh, Wake Forest lost. Yeah, okay. And I mean, look, it's not a 1AA team. It's not a bowl championship whatever the FBS.
We know what you mean. Gotcha.
Whatever all these lingos are. It's not, I mean, so they are Conference USA team. So, I mean, it's not like there's that much of a disparity. So, you know, I think that the season is long. I mean, Wake might pull a couple more wins. I mean, you never know. And I just, at the end of the season, I would be very hesitant to pull the trigger and fire Grobe because he could pretty much, I would assume, somebody else will take him.
Yeah, I agree. So another game in the Atlantic that went, I would say, much better than Wake was FSU's win over Nevada.
Big win for the Noles. It was. Did you watch any of this game, Will?
I this is another game that I kind of had on in the background for a while. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is it started really slow.
It did. Well, you know, honestly, at the beginning of it, I was very nervous. I think this is going to be my MO all season. I'm just always fearful that, you know, something's going to happen and famous Jameis is going to come back to Earth, because where he is right now is on this other planet somewhere. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he does it. So I'm always fearful that he's going to come back down to Earth. And there at the beginning, he started off a little slow. He threw a pick. He just overthrew his guy. It wasn't a pretty throw, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he should have looked at the coverage and seen that he was thrown right to the in the coverage. But he rebounded, and he completed his last 13 throws. So, I mean, once he got on there, he really is a streaky passer. Once he gets into his rhythm, he is good. And as I'm watching the game, I'm sitting there saying, why don't you just run the ball? You can obviously run the ball at Nevada. They can't stop you. And there at the beginning, they were throwing it, and they kept with their game plan. I mean, Jimbo knows what he wants to do, and he wants to run that play action, and he wants to keep throwing the ball, and it eventually worked. But there at the beginning, you're right. It was slow. Nevada had chances. Nevada had some chances to score early and just couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it. And I think that's a testament to the fact that Florida State's defense, I think, is the real deal. They look solid. They have a lot of athletes, and they have athletes across the board. Everybody on that team is so incredibly fast. There's so much speed and size. They were, I don't know if you knew this, Will, but Carlos Williams was a defensive player, and after the first game of the season, Jimbo brought him over to running back and said, we think you can help us out. I mean, we already have two running backs over there who are pretty good. And he had a big 65-yard run. First game as a running back. Just bulldozed through. So, I mean, there are tons of athletes on this team. And I think this could be a very special year.
Yeah, that would be great for the conference if that were the case, for sure. And it just really sets up. It's going to be exciting when Clemson matches up against Florida State later in the season.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of people still, I mean, people are saying, okay, well, FSU might be okay. But people still are not giving them any credit because they say, well, Clemson has to be better. It's a home game. Clemson has to be better. We'll see. We'll see. They're definitely going to go in there. I don't think it's going to change. They'll be an underdog going into that game. And it'll be interesting because I think that Florida State has a lot of really good athletes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. So, okay, let me ask you this, though. Is Winston, is he still going to be in the Heisman talk? I mean,
he
had a great game, but just over 200 yards passing, you know, it doesn't look super pretty on the stat line.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it in the second half, I mean, you kind of went away from passing it, the sense that you're getting, I mean, you had several big runs, huge runs, where you just basically, you know, went straight down the field. So I don't see, I mean, he completed his last 13 in a row. So he has more touchdown passes than incompletions.
Wow, that is impressive.
Okay,
really
so
impressive.
So that you know, I think that the season's a long season. My hope is that at the end of the season he does not win the Heisman because he's a freshman, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, that I think he's going to have a great year, and I think he's going to be a very special player for a few years.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to talk more about the other big games in the ACC and the SEC, specifically the SEC, because there was one really big one yesterday. But before we get into, I guess, our overview of all the games, there's a couple of things that happened outside of the ACC-SEC that bears mentioning. For one, our old friend George O'Leary had a big win away at Penn State.
Yeah, this was at Penn State. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Beats his former offensive coordinator, his former offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien, who's now the head coach over there. So if you look at that, both those coaching staffs, I mean, are a lot of good friends on there. I mean, they all know each other. They all used to work together here at Tech. So that was a big win. And something that Coach O'Leary always said is that, you know, he will play anybody at any point because, especially if it's a non-conference game, because the importance of winning conference games is what matters more than anything. So you go and do one of these huge non-conference games. If you do enough of them, eventually you'll win one.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But the point is that it gets you ready for the conference. So you play a big non-conference game, and then, you know, instead of all the patsies, so then you're ready. So when the real games that count come, you've already played a big game. You've already prepared for that. So that was his philosophy. That's why, you know, we played Notre Dame a couple times when he was here and that kind of thing. And, you know, he's come close a few times at Central Florida. They had Texas actually came to Central Florida, and they almost beat them. And I think there was another one they almost won. But this is the first time they've really broken through, and I think that's a big win for that program.
Yep.
And keep in mind, Will, that this is the last year of the BCS, and the American Conference, or whatever they're calling themselves these days, which Central Florida is in, has an automatic BCS bid. So, you know, that game with Louisville at the end of the year, or near the end of the year, is really shaping up. That could be a big game. They could be in a BCS game.
Depending on what happens, Louisville, they beat Kentucky pretty well, but they look a little bit shaky at times too. So, who knows? UCF is 3-0. They might have a shot. Who knows?
Yes, it could be interesting, and that's good. I mean, it's good in the sense that for Louisville, everybody just said, oh well, once they get to the, you know, American Athletic Conference schedule, it's just going to be a bunch of patsies. I don't think Central Florida is going to lay down for them. That's going to be a big game.
Yeah, the other game that I want to bring up is, really, by itself, the game itself,
not really important. Yeah, not worth mentioning.
You may not, you know, if this one particular thing doesn't happen,
it's not mentioning for a good reason, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But if you watch the Wisconsin-Arizona State game, it came down to the very end of the game, and there was a crazy play that happened at the end of the game that was game-altering. Right. If it had gone the way it was supposed to go, a different team would have won. So yeah. Do you want to set this up, Andrew? What exactly happened for our listeners who didn't see the replay of this?
Yeah, I can try my best at calling this. Okay, so I mean you're at Arizona State, and I would assume that it's the same way as it is in most places that the away team's conference brings officials, but I couldn't find that information. I probably should have done a better job researching. Sorry, guys. So the Wisconsin is the away team. And Arizona State has driven the field, gets a go-ahead touchdown with about 2 minutes to go, I think. And so Wisconsin gets the ball and starts driving down the field. They get a first down with about 18 seconds to go at the – I think they're at like the 15.
Yeah, they're pretty close.
Very close. They're down by 2 points. They're at the 15. They've just gotten a first down, so there's 18 seconds to go.
They have no timeouts.
No timeouts. So their first play – right after this, after their first down, was the quarterback takes the snap, runs to the center of the field, and takes a knee with 18 seconds to go. And that should be plenty of time.
Because they wanted to snap the ball and then
right.
And
if
then,
you're,
spike
yeah, you,
it.
You're lining up in the center of the field. You want to get another snap and you spike it at the center of the field, then you got to
set yourself up for your field goal.
Chip shot. So he kneels, and from the ESPN angle, it's a little bit fuzzy if he actually kneels, because he literally kneels his foot down and just places the football down on the grass. Instead of handing it to the official, he places it down after he takes a knee. Well, when he does that, all of these Arizona State players just pile onto the football, and all the officials look around like they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Whistles have been blown. The whistle has been blown, clearly.
And the Arizona State, one of the linemen,
just
doesn't
holds on.
Get up.
Yeah, he just holds on to that ball. Yeah. And so the clock keeps on ticking, and the quarterback looks back at the official, another one of the umpires. The whole offensive line is literally standing there with, like, by the time it gets to like 4 seconds, and they're realizing, we got to go. And it's still ticking down. It gets to like 5 seconds, and all the offensive line just stands there waiting, and the umpire's holding his hand back, waiting to signal play in. Because of all the time that had been taken, and the clock just expires. It just ends.
Yep. They snapped it like 2 seconds after
and
the clock hit zero.
Yeah.
And what's
so
crazy about
it.
This is there's a couple of things that should have happened. First off, Arizona State should have gotten a penalty for delay of game for laying on the ball.
Yeah, that's unsportsmanlike conduct.
If you want to think that it may have been a fumble, then you have to review to see if it was a fumble. So there would have been two reasons to stop the clock and allow them to basically allow Wisconsin to have another play.
Yeah.
But because I don't know what happened, but the officials just totally screwed up.
If you watch, I mean, the coach he's talking to the officials and he just says no, and they just run off the field. And all the players are out there, and the whole stadium's going nuts. I mean, it's insane. I've never seen anything like it. If you have access, I would go online and watch this into this game. It's truly incredible. I've never seen. I don't know what the officials were doing, because they shouldn't have allowed that to happen. That really did alter the game.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And you don't know that it's going to happen, but I mean, Wisconsin's not a bad team. What if that's their only loss this season? You know, I mean, that's just a shame.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
okay, one last segment, Andrew, and then we'll wrap up. We're gonna go through all the games and offer our quick comments, or not so quick, depending on the game. For each game.
Did you want to talk about Virginia Tech at all? I mean, is that
well?
We'll
talk about Virginia Tech when we get to them on this.
Because I know you're pretty hot about Virginia
Tech, which is the very first game on my list.
Ah.
So, Virginia Tech, East Carolina, they played at noon yesterday. So, they are the first ones that we'll talk about.
Right.
So, Virginia Tech wins this game, but this game was really, really close.
And I don't know really if any of our listeners are Fox Sports 1 watchers, but I don't have Fox Sports 1, so I couldn't even see the game. I don't know. Does anybody watch that channel?
I have that channel, and I watched it. And East Carolina, okay, they're not a BCS team. They're in Conference USA. They have a pretty decent offense, considering they scored a lot of points in their first two games. But there's still East Carolina, and Virginia Tech should be able to score points against them. For example, East Carolina, in their first game of the season, they played Old Dominion, I believe, and Old Dominion scored 38 points against East Carolina.
No disrespect to Old Dominion and their program, but I don't think that they are...
They're not Virginia Tech.
Not quite the powerhouse.
So, and I know it's hard to, make connections one way or the other, and East Carolina was scoring a lot of points in that game. They scored 52 points in that game, so that is a little bit of a shootout, which, there's a lot of possessions back and forth,
right,
so maybe that
right.
explains why Old Dominion scored so many points. But Virginia Tech scored 15 points during this game.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, and two of them were at the end of the game on a safety when East Carolina was kind of getting desperate. They left a lot of points in the field. Andrew, Beamer ball. You mentioned it earlier in one of our earlier podcasts. Beamer
right.
ball is dead. It is dead. They missed two bad field goals. They should chip shot field goals that they just completely whiffed on. So I don't know what is going on with Virginia Tech. Their defense looks good for the most part. They gave up a decent amount of points against Alabama, but a lot of those were on special teams, and Alabama's defense scored some points. Virginia Tech actually did a pretty good job against Alabama defensively, and they did a good job against East Carolina too. They only allowed 10 points the entire game. But their offense is so just anemic.
The interesting thing is that Frank Beamer's his MO is, hey, we're just going to run the football. We'll run it at you, and we'll be able to run.
But
it doesn't look like they can run.
They can't run the ball. They had 53 rushing yards in this game. And it's not that they weren't trying. They had 34 attempts. They were trying to rush the ball.
Nothing.
While on the stat sheet, Logan Thomas looks like he did a pretty decent job. He had over 250 passing yards, a couple of touchdowns, and one interception. He just doesn't look that good out there. He's not making the plays when they need to be made. There's a lot of third downs where they just couldn't convert. And what was really frustrating to me is watching that game and kind of seeing how they just couldn't put points up against a Conference USA opponent. And the Fox Sports 1 announcers just could not stop praising Logan Thomas, which was so odd because he really didn't look that good. So, really interesting what's going on with them. It wasn't too long ago that Virginia Tech was the program for the ACC. They were at the top of the list, and I don't see that being the case anymore. I just feel like they're going to lose a lot of games this year if they keep playing like that. Every week.
Yeah, and I mean the sad thing is that Frank Beamer, I believe, is the longest tenured coach in college football. So, we might be seeing the end of it, and I don't want to say
that he's on the hot seat, but Bud Foster has been kind of sitting in the wings, and he's always the rumors of going somewhere else, and he's just always there, but
yeah.
maybe Bud Foster is the someone who could actually take over for
I mean you can't let him go. You can't let Bud Foster go.
Yeah, oh definitely not, because their defense does look legit, but we'll just see what happens. They have Marshall next week, and then they have their game against Georgia Tech, so we'll see what happens. Their defense is only going to have a couple days to prepare for us, so
hopefully that's to our benefit. Yeah,
that'll be an interesting game. The next one is ULM Wake. We already talked about this one. Both me and Andrew got this one wrong, since Wake lost. The next game was New Mexico at Pitt. Pitt played pretty well in this game, beat New Mexico pretty handedly for the most part.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Bob Davies' team would do a little bit better than what they did, but, you know, good job for Pitt. I mean, they looked pretty sound.
Yeah, I agree. Boston College, USC, both of us were wrong on this one. Boston College.
Hey, maybe that players-only meeting did something at USC.
Yeah, you never know. I mean,
they put up 35 points, so maybe their offense is back together. You know, we don't know. Maybe Washington State's defense is one of the best in the country. I don't know. But
or maybe Boston College just isn't very good.
Come on, Will, now. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Boston College. You know, I think that Steve Addazio can turn the program around. It just might not be this year.
Yeah. And we both picked Boston College to win that game, but I think that was
an upset. I mean, it was an upset. It definitely was. I mean, most people weren't picking it, but just as how terrible USC had looked.
Yeah, it's not a bad pick. So.
Right. I mean, USC has got the better athletes. We're not going to deny that. They have a lot of good players, and it looks like they were able to put it together for a win. So, you know, maybe this is – you know, maybe they can do a little bit more of that. Who knows?
Yep. Next game, Georgia Tech-Duke. We both picked Tech, so there you go. Nevada, FSU. We both picked FSU. We've already talked about both those games. Syracuse beats Wagner. Not really a surprise. Maryland beats UConn.
I definitely learned my lesson. I'll keep picking Maryland, it looks like.
Yeah, Maryland, they're just rolling.
Yeah,
rolling
Randy
right
Edsel,
on,
so. Well, you know, he'll have a long tenured career there at Maryland. Unfortunately, it won't be in the ACC. Shucks.
Shucks. Oh. Sorry for all you Maryland fans out there, but... I guess we won't miss talking about them next year, will we?
I won't. Not really. Not with Randy Edsel and his winning demeanor.
Yeah. We got Louisville coming into town, so. Which is the next game. Louisville takes on Kentucky. We're done with the ACC, moving on to the SEC. Louisville beats Kentucky on the road. It's got a little bit close at times. Too close for comfort, I guess, for what you would expect from Louisville, but... They took care of business in the end. They won 27-13.
The interesting thing is that, you know, the mighty SEC is the third best team in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, there you go. But they're Kentucky, you know, they're Kentucky.
They don't count.
Arkansas beat Southern Miss. It wasn't really that close, so no surprise there. Although we kind of were worried about Arkansas last week. Only recorded just because they hadn't played well against out-of-conference people up to this point. Oregon beats the snot out of Tennessee. That's not a surprise. Oregon is really good.
They have so much speed. It's incredible how fast they are.
Here's something that I thought was really interesting about Oregon, and the stat has not been verified, but they run that real hurry-up offense, and with their new coach... Because their former coach, and the name slips my mind, is with the Eagles now.
Chip Kelly.
But with their new coach, which is there's still a lot of the old assistants are there from the season before. They are on average 3 seconds faster per snap than they were last year. So that's pretty crazy. That as fast as they were on offense last year, they are even quicker this year.
How many plays are they getting off? Do you know what they average?
Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head, I can look it up really fast. But they're still getting lots of plays off.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible how fast that offense runs, how efficient they are, and how fast the players are. I mean, the way they run their offense is just – it's a lot of fun to watch. It really is.
Let's see if – I don't know if I can just pull up the number of plays they had. They had 35 passing attempts and 41 rushing attempts. So really not as many plays as you would expect.
Yeah. Usually with those kind of fast pace, I'm sure what they are going for is 100 plays. I mean, that's usually your goal.
Yeah, but I think they slowed it down in the fourth quarter because they didn't score anything.
So far, they're so far ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're going to be really good, and I don't know who's going to beat them going forward. Okay, so
Now that being said, UCLA might give them a run for their money. They looked really, really good against Nebraska.
Yeah, that's
yesterday,
true.
Going to Nebraska and beating them by 20 points. So that's not easy to do. Nebraska is a very hostile environment to say the least. And so being able to go there to Nebraska and just, I mean, it started off and they were down. UCLA was down big, like 21-3 or something. And they came back and scored 35 straight points. So they might be pretty good this year.
Yeah, we'll have to look into it and see. So the next game was the big game. Nobody was calling it the game of the century. Like.
Now, Will, the big game is actually Cal versus Stanford for all of our listeners out on the West Coast. So sorry about that.
Sorry about that. But this game was – everybody was looking forward to this game since last year, really. But Alabama, they beat Texas A&M. Close game. Exciting game.
Very exciting game.
It was a lot more exciting than I really expected it to be. The last time this happened where they really, really hyped up a game was a couple years ago when Alabama played LSU, and that game ended up being a very, very defensive game, which...
It was boring.
Depending on who you ask,
it was a
most
boring
people
game.
Thought it was pretty boring. I mean, there's some people out there who really, really like defensive games, and I can understand enjoying that. I mean, for a baseball game, I like to watch a 1-0 game every now and then. I think they're exciting. But that game was pretty boring. There was a lot of three and outs, and just it didn't really look like – it looked like very, very conservative football in that game a couple years ago. But yesterday, lots and lots and lots of scoring, and came down to the end of the game. Texas A&M makes a – gosh, that –
touchdown pass
by Johnny Manziel, and he had one of the plays of the year, I think, so far. Did you see that play where he almost gets sacked a couple of times and then just tosses it up and gets the first down?
Yeah,
that was,
then
that was
the play
impressive.
That should have been intercepted, and it's not. Well, then on like two plays later, he throws an interception. I was like,
yeah. But still, before that,
it was a great play.
Yeah, that was a fantastic play. So, two very, very good teams squaring off against one another. Very exciting game.
Back to that play, Will. I know that we have disproven the law of averages, but it looks like the law of averages speaks volumes because he throws what should have been an interception.
Yeah.
And so then, of course, he's got to throw it on a routine, you know, play. Yeah. It's going to throw an interception. So, Lady Luck or the law of averages or, you know, the football gods, they worked their little magic there.
Yeah, exactly. So, but Texas A&M, they still look really good. And Johnny Football is a really, you know, say what you will about him, he's really good.
Who picked Alabama?
You did, and I did not. So
here's the thing. Since Nick Saban has been at Alabama,
I know you're going to say it.
He has lost one time when he lost the previous year. So he's never, except for once, he never loses twice in a row to the same team. It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I won't be making that mistake again this year. Of course,
I always say, yeah, I mean, I don't pick against Spurrier. I don't pick against Saban.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Going down the line, Mississippi State, Auburn. That was a really exciting game. That came down to the
very
end.
Yeah, last 10 seconds of the game, Auburn wins.
Yep.
That actually ended a 10-game losing streak in the SEC for Auburn.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they didn't win any last year, and it goes all the way back to 2 years ago.
And you picked Auburn. I was wrong on this one. I picked Mississippi State. Though it wasn't a bad pick because it was so close.
It wasn't a bad pick, but it's hard. When going to the Plains, it's hard to go into the Plains and win. That's just a really, especially 8 o'clock game. It's just an electric environment. Those Auburn fans, you know, they've been waiting a long time for this win. So, you know, props to them and the coaching staff for getting it done.
Yep. Just a few more games. Vandy loses to South Carolina. They made that game a little bit more closer than people expected it to be. But South Carolina does what it's really expected and wins that game. LSU beats Kent State. Not a surprise. And Ole Miss beats Texas pretty good. And Andrew, let me see if this reminds you of anything, because one of the things that happened during the game is Mac Brown, there was a PSA during the game where Mac Brown was speaking at the PSA, and there were boos in the crowd.
Yeah, that's never a good sign, and I would imagine that DeLoss Dodds, the athletic director at Texas, probably was in the crowd and heard that, and that's
probably.
not you know, when you're paying somebody $5 million a year, you don't want people booing him.
Yep.
So, and like I said, Texas has got money. Okay,
yep.
They this year, once again, as they always are, they have the most licensed apparel and paraphernalia out there. So they sell the most of anybody. They got plenty of money. They got their own network. If they want him to go, they'll work something out, and he's not going to be there next year. So
yeah,
it could be a long year in Texas.
I agree. And the PSA that reminded me of 2007 when they put Chan Gailey up on a PSA. And
he wasn't around much longer.
He wasn't around too much longer. So I feel like that's a good sign that it may be getting closer to the end for Brown at Texas.
There are a lot of, there are a lot of fan bases that, they expect too much, and, they don't understand where their team really is. Texas isn't one of those places. They think they're one of the best. Well, they are. Okay, they got more resources than anybody, and if they want somebody gone, they can get them gone. It's not going to be a problem, and they should be winning more than they are. Like, it's just, they should be. They should be able to get the players in there because, it's by God, it's Texas. So,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens.
Yep.
We'll see what happens. But, honestly, Hugh Freeze, Ole Miss coach, he was the visiting coach this year. He very well might be the home coach next year.
Good point.
So, yeah, I mean, Hugh Freeze from that area, so you might see a little switcheroo there. We'll see.
Yep. So that's the games for this past week. Andrew, you went 14-2. I went 12-4. And wow, after 3 weeks, we are all knotted up at 49-9 apiece. So
it's only going to get tougher. Yeah, it's only going to
it's going to get a lot tougher.
Now.
I think we're pretty much so done with the
Pat
the
season.
Easy. Yeah, the most of the non-conference, easy games are done. So it'll get tougher. But we've done pretty well for the most part. Less than 10 wrong picks after 3 weeks. That's pretty good for the both of us.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm. There's some work to be done. We'll make some improvements and some adjustments in the weeks coming. But I'm gonna try my best with my picks.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening. My name is Will Patton,
and I'm joined by Andrew
Brown. This is the Fourth and Short podcast. Thanks for listening again, and we hope that you tune in next time. See you later.